time so we can play among the stars. Come and see what war was like before the coming of Sigmar. In other words, here they are. In other words, that old world charm.
Hello, everybody out there in this big wide world of old world. That worked. My name's Adam Camilleri. Welcome to another episode of That Old World Charm. I'm joined just by the illustrious gentleman himself, Mr. Peter the Falcon. Hello, mate.
Hello, my baby. How are you?
That's me, your baby.
Yes, you are my baby.
I'm so happy with that description. That's a huge joy.
I mean, usually I have two babies on the show, sometimes three, if Dickie's listening in. But here we are. It's just you and my one baby.
That's right. The sweet meat himself, Danny McDevitt, has otherwise been detained, called away, something like that. He's getting waterboarded as we speak. He's questing to meet the bar because he wants to be a lawyer. So he's going through a bunch of hazing, a bunch of paddling as we speak. And
I think it's actually just an RTT. I think that he lied to us.
I mean, he's a lawyer, so that's probably par for the course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, He better win. Either if he loses, he's off the show.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. I've seen the list of players at the RTT that he promised us he wasn't going to. It's bad. He's got this in the bag.
And if you're going to that event, just feel free to hit him in the knee like a certain figure skater once did. But we are here to review, at the bequest and request of our wonderful patrons, the Bretonian army list. Now, clause here, of course, there is the Arcane Journal for Bretonians, and we will be referencing that as we go, but you can expect a full, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's review to come at some point in the future where we guys give you the full download there. But when relevant, when reviewing through this army book, we will be referring to that when it comes up. Which we have already done in the Patreon group. We designed a Bretonian Exiles list for our wonderful Tech Priest Dickie, Skin Priest Dickie rather. And yeah. If you want any of that goodness, because we're going to be answering a phenomenal deluge of very poignant, very good questions from our Patreon group over in part 2. If you want to get in on that, come over to That Old World Charm over in Patreon, sign up and get involved, and also, you know, jump in the Discord, all those other lovely perks in addition to that full other half of the show. I'm pretty keen for this review, and I'm very happy that we're doing one of the supported, you know, first wave release, that being either the Tomb Kings or the Bretonians. I was hoping one of those got enough votes, and the Bretonians got an overwhelmingly more votes. They were like four or five more than the next, which was a equal tie between dwarves, orcs and goblins, and I think lizardmen was tied for second place. So one of those is likely to be the next one we do. So if you're from that faction and you want to cast your vote for which one of those three factions gets next, jump in to get involved. But mate, Bretonia, how are you feeling about this faction overall? Give us your hot takes, so to speak.
Bretonia. So I've only gotten one game in against Bretonia so far. I've played a lot of Warhammer Fantasy now, old world, but Bretonia is not very popular locally. I know I'm probably going to be getting a game in against them next week. I suspect it's going to be Pegasus Knight spam, which is like a list that I am legitimately terrified of. I think it's got real strong legs competitively. But Bretonia in general has always been one of my favorite armies from an aesthetic standpoint. It's an army that if you're a good hobbyist, it's just absolutely gorgeous on the table. It's a play style that I've always wanted to be good, right? Because we both played a lot of 8th edition where Bretonia kind of wasn't great unless it was heavily comped. They were fantastic in older editions. I think right now they're in an interesting spot.
Yeah, in 8th edition, they were like, you know, bringing a spoon to a knife fight. They were just outclassed in the art of being cavalry, so to speak. And then they ended up having to, you know, especially in Swiss or ETC comp, having just playing with more points than you in order to balance that faction. And then actually, they actually did okay. I remember playing against Knight Busters that had a whole front rank of just 2-up save, 1-up save paladins, and it was actually a nightmare to try and get through sometimes. But then on the reverse, when they charged you, you were just like, They didn't do any damage. Just they either beat you on the static combat resin, broke you, or you know whatnot. But they do also have the heroic killing word goodness, which is actually some of the flavor that they have retained in this army book. I am a Brett's enjoyer. I am Bretonian curious, and I've had my finger on the pulse of a lot of what is going and moving and shaking for Bretonia, because they're an army I would not mind having an army of in the future. They're one I was sitting on the fence of on release, because I really wanted to see what new models and support they would get. I was really hoping they'd get a new knight unit, but it turns out they got the foot knights, which look absolutely stunning. I was a bit, and I'm still iffy whether or not I'm gonna take the dive, but I have been talking to quite a few Bretonian lovers, and I've got some insights into what is moving and shaking for them at the moment. The biggest thing is just that, like, pegs seem to be a best in game like unit. There is kind of nothing else that does what the Pegasus Knight does. And then when you add in the fact that Pegasus, and you can skew into that harder by having some of the better characters in the game supporting those pegs and being supported by those pegs, it really creates an archetype that can be very smothering and extremely powerful and one of the most dynamic in the game and very exciting.
Yes.
Either way, so.
Like, we'll talk about it further when we kind of go over the units themselves, but there are very few things in the game that are skirmishers, so they have 360 vision, special rule, so they can just fly over units, and like the hitting power, like all three of those things combined that Pegasus Knights have.
And a freaking save. Like everything you just said is like a wild rider almost, except they don't fly and they don't have a save. And pegs have both. And it's buck wild when you compare them to like other equivalents in the game, which of course is apples and oranges. You shouldn't really do it. But of course we all do, because we're, you know, crazy like that. We can't help ourselves in comparing cross faction. But we are going to do this review a little bit differently. Because rather than running it through in the way that is laid out for in the Forces of Fantasy, the Good Guys book, we're going to go over the special rules, the army special rules first, because otherwise when we go through it in logical way, which is the more logical way, because we go through it in the way they tell us, it goes straight into the unit entries, and trying to explain the unit entries to you guys, if you don't know much about Bretonians, it's very hard to do when essentially all of their units look pretty ordinary except for the special rules. The special rules are everything with this faction. The vows, the virtues, if I explain to you men at arms, if I tell you about men at arms, the points cost, the war gear, and their stat line, but I don't tell you the special rules, that's a trash tier unit. But as soon as I tell you the special rules, you're like, oh my God, that is an incredible unit. And that's what we mean. There is a lot of context here that needs a bit of insight before we get started. So we're going to jump to the back. The middle of the back, and then we're going to jump back to the front again.
Yeah, so if you're following along, this is going to be page 107 and 108 of the Forces of Fantasy book.
Now, if you haven't been for a review as of yet, because we've only done one before, that was in episode 8 for the Warriors of Chaos, which first one, I still think we did a good job, but there's a lot of ways for us to go. And of course, in these early days, please forgive us if we make mistakes. There are still interpretations coming out. FAQs are due. And we like to think we got our finger on the pulse of that stuff, but we're fallible and still early days. All right, the first of the Bretonian special rules is the most important one. This is the Blessings of the Lady. Once deployment is complete, instead of rolling off to determine which player takes first turn, the Kingdom of Bretonia player may kneel and pray for the Blessing of the Lady. If they do so, the opposing player counts as having won the roll-off, no roll occurs, and the Lady's Blessing is granted, giving all models in the Kingdom of Bretonian army with this special rule a 6+ ward save against any and all wounds suffered, and a 5+ ward save against anything with a strength characteristic of 5 or higher. Note that if there is no roll-off to determine which player takes the first turn, the Bretonian army cannot kneel and get the blessing. And also, if it is a mirror match, neither of you get the blessing, which I also find is very funny. And I love the idea of that, because the lady refuses to bless either of you because you're being so silly and fighting each other.
Yeah, and then it's very much like, you know, in football when both sides pray. Who are you praying to? Like, what's going on there? You're making a guy pick sides? Like, the lady's not going to pick sides either.
No,
she's an elf that's, like, scantily dressed inside a lake. She's not interested in this scenario. Let's play it out, guys.
Yeah, this episode's not to her liking. And, of course, you can lose the blessing. And unlike other special rules, it can be lost during a game. Any model that flees or any character that refuses a challenge will immediately lose this special rule. This is an extremely good and important and impactful special rule, mate. One of the biggest and most important in the game, because it offers a multi multi-spectrum control. You know, not only are you just flat increasing the durability of your entire army by doing this, but you can just choose who goes first if you want. If you want to not go first, you just don't even need to worry about rolling the dice. You're like, well, you don't have any guns. You have to, you know, either stay where you are and waste your first turn or possibly just move into my charge range turn one. I'm kneeling 100% of the time. Like there are so many ways in which this just offers you a level of control over the state of the game. But how do you see it? How do you value it?
Oh, it's core to the way this army plays. It's the reason why some of their units might seem overcosted at first until you realize, you know, every six guys there's actually a seventh dude in there. And in the case of like high impact shooting or high impact close combat, you get a 5-up ward save. That's absolutely incredible. It's a very, very powerful rule. And Bretonnia is an army that does not mind going second. Like they're not wood elves or something that really likes to have that first kick at the can, as it were. So it fits their playstyle perfectly. So
yeah. Finest Warhorse is up next. When a unit with this special rule makes a charge, flee, or pursuit roll, it may reroll any dice that is a natural one before discarding any dice that are required to be discarded. So if you are pursuing, charging, or fleeing, you just have a little bit of insurance to the job that you're deciding to do. Of course, if you are fleeing, you've lost the lady, so you might as well try and get away if you can, or you know, die ingloriously. I'll just do the rest of the special rules here, and we can unpack them as a bunch. Lance Formation, of course, we did unpack the Lance Formation a little bit as one of the alternative ways to deploy a unit, should it be, you know, in previous episodes. But most people know how this works, but we will describe it when it comes up and is more relevant. But they can be deployed within this special formation instead of close or open order or skirmish, whatever. And then Peasantry is the last one. If a unit with a special rule is within six of a friendly model that has the Knight's Vow, the Questing Vow, or the Grail Vow, and that model is not fleeing, this unit can use that model's leadership characteristic instead of its own. In addition, a standard carried by a unit with a special rule cannot be counted as a trophy of war, that being the extra 25 points you get from taking a banner in the game. A character with a special rule can only join other units with this special rule. When you sum all these up, mate, where's the good stuff apart from the blessing? Are any of these other three any good?
I mean, they all have their benefits for sure. The Lance, because of the way wheeling and everything works in the game, is highly mobile. There are some questions about how it actually functions when it comes to some of the rules of the game, which I'm hoping we'll see an FAQ on very soon. And I expect we will. But like the fact that the way the Lance plays kind of gives you this extra mobility on top of getting these rerolls of one, on top of the fact that you're generally a mounted army, they're all just gravy. And Peasantry is surprisingly strong in this army because a number of the Peasantry units are absolutely fantastic for their points. Oh, so getting that leadership buff without needing your general hugging your guys, and also the fact that in general Peasantry units do not invoke panic on units that aren't Peasantry. Like that's killer. So you can sacrifice your men at arms, your peasant bowmen, to free up space, and you don't have to worry about accidentally rolling that or letting the god of luck hit you in the butt, and you roll a 10 or an 11 and lose like a giant unit over it. Right. So they're very, very strong special rules for sure.
All right, now we're jumping back to the front of things. This is page 85. This is the army composition list. Essentially, the only things to really tell you about here is that you can only ever have one duke in any army. So that's the top tier lord, which is, you know, par for the course. Dukes don't share. And then, of course, you can have 0-1 baron or prophetess per 1,000 points. And then the core of your army, at least 25%, must be at least one unit of Knights of the Realm on foot and or mounted. So you must have. And then the rest is 1+ men-at-arms or peasant bowmen. You must have. And then the rest can be distributed in knights-errant, Knights of the Realm on foot or mounted, et cetera, et cetera. So apart from that, it's just take whatever you like. The special's pretty conventional. The rare's pretty conventional. It's very interesting, and I think this is the only place in the game where you will get a free BSB. Any paladin can just be your battle standard bearer at no extra cost, which is kind of really cute. It's like there's zero reason not to take a BSB in every army. It's just, well, yeah. And paladins are actually quite good for in their equivalence, because they come with a very good save as standard, as long as they're on any decent mount. So how do you feel about the army composition list, and is there anything spicy here I missed?
I mean, I don't think so. Like, they've limited trebuchets to 0 to 1 per 1,000 points.
Yeah.
And battle pilgrims are limited to 2 per 1,000 points, which is like a low-key good choice, because battle pilgrims are one of the few units in the game that can gain the unbreakable rule.
Yeah, correct.
That don't have like a negative side effect, right? Like Tomb Kings and vampires and demons. The majority of their armies are unbreakable by default, but they always they generally have a, like, instability or something that hurts them. And battle pilgrims don't have that. They're relatively cheap dudes that are unbreakable as long as you take a grail. And having played against the old versions of this, it can be very frustrating if your opponent has more than one of them.
Yeah.
So
I've lost games against Bretonians in 8th edition who like would reform their battle pilgrims to be single file, like just huge, essentially straight line hammer bricks that just gum you up so that the Bretonian lancers always get the charge, because you can't not get stuck on the battle pilgrims. And that kind of stuff is just it's just kind of toxic at the time. But hey, Bretonians are going to do what they got to do back then. You got to do what you got to do. I agree. But anyway, apart from the free BSB, this is a fairly standard army composition list that you will see, Grand Army list. So we're going to jump into the units, and taking feedback from our last review, we are going to spend a little bit more time on the units. And the fact of the matter is, Bretonians don't have a huge swathe of units. We can almost do all of them. And in fact, we're going to attempt to. Lords of Bretonnia is up first. Dukes, Barons, and Paladins, 175, 160 points respectively. Essentially, it's just a step down from weapon skill 7 to weapon skill 6 for the other two, from the Duke to the Baron and the Paladin. Strength, beautifully, the Duke gets strength 5, which is actually pretty big, and 4s on the other. Toughness 4 all the way around, and then stepping down from 4, 3 to 2 on the wounds, initiative 5, 5 and 4, and then of course stepping down 1 in respect to all the attacks. Duke's just coming with strength 5, initiative 5 and attacks 5 is actually really big. It's actually not bad at all. 175 points.
And you have to consider the fact that they come baked in with the Grail Vow, which for the others, they have to pay 20 points for. The Grail Vow, we didn't really talk about the Night Vows, but that gives you immune to psychology, which is a very powerful rule. And it also ensures that you always have, or that even if you do not pray, you have the blessing of the Lady, which is fantastic for a number of reasons. But yeah, so like you get that nailed in 20 points for that. So he's technically 155 points for those extra bonuses. Like you said, strength 5 is a really good break point, because if you give him a great weapon or you give him a lance, he's strength 7. Yep. Most of the scary monsters in the game are strength 6, or toughness 6, I should say. So, you know, you're getting that extra +1 to wound. These are your heavy hitters. They all have rallying cry. They all come with Blessing of the Lady. Like I said, the Duke comes base with the Grail Vow. The others can upgrade to either have the Questing Vow or the Grail Vow. And like, these are just heavy hitting dudes. They can take virtues on top of taking magic items, so you can make them quite expensive very fast. But they will be very defensive by default, and they hit like trucks.
What I always have my only issue really quantifying these guys is that these points are always with them just walking around, and they're never going to be on foot. Essentially, maybe a paladin can be on foot with some, you know, walking knights of the realm, but apart from that, every single time you take one of these guys, it's going to be more points than it looks, because you're always going to want to put them on something. You're always going to want to have them mounted on something, even if it's just a bartered warhorse. But either way, very, very, very good lords. And heroes, I suppose you could say, and they do definitely line up pretty well against their contemporaries. Tell us about handmaidens and prophetesses, damsels.
Sure. So handmaidens are the wizards of Bretonnia. The big difference here between your prophetess / damsel and your standard empire wizard or chaos sorcerer is that they get the aura of the lady and the shield of the lady. So the aura of the lady is as long as you have a prophetess or a damsel in a unit, that unit gains the magical attack special rule. This is a very nice small buff. The big thing this does is it gives you a way to hurt ethereal units, which are pretty scary in a couple of the armies there right now. Yep, vampires 100%. Have some scary ethereal units. More importantly, high elves with the Walk Between Worlds can make some absolutely terrifying units. So having magical attacks is beautiful for basically free because it's a cheap caster. And Shield of the Lady, if the prophetess or damsel is in a unit that has a unit strength of 10 or more and has any of the knightly vows, whether it's the questing vow, the grail vow, or the knightly vow, they do not have to be in the front rank. They get to yep. quote unquote retire to the back automatically, and that gives them protection about from being targeted out once you get into close combat, which is absolutely crucial if you're going to be, you know, trying to keep your characters alive. I know when I'm playing the game, one of the first things I generally think about if I'm, you know, playing for keeps, as I want to say, is I'm trying to target out your characters, especially those like paper thin casters, if you're giving me correct. The option to.
Yep.
So that extra layer of protection is awesome on them.
Because they are the opposite of defensible. They come with the Blessing of the Lady, so they come with a ward save, but you can pretty much not give them an armor save, and their toughness 3 wounds, they will die to Night Goblins if you give them enough attacks. Definitely this is a great thing to try and keep them safe.
The other two things I should mention about these guys is they have access to two of the best spell lords in the game in correct. Elementalism and Illusion. Yep. And they have native, both the Damsel and the Prophetess, magic resist -2.
This is huge. Huge.
Which is really big if you're going into a lot of level 4 casters or anything like that, because you're going to be helping to shut down these casters from hitting your big mega units that you're trying to protect. If you have, you know, a squad of questing knights, or if yep. you decided to bring Grail Knights, that extra layer of protection is very important for them.
It's just insurance. How many points is an Obsidian Lodestone? Is it 20 or 25?
An Obsidian Lodestone is 20 points. So yep. it's 40 points to get MR2.
Just a damsel is 60. I mean, on foot is just 60. So you're paying, essentially you're paying 20 points for the stat line, because you've got 40 yeah. points of magic. You've got 40 points of magic resistance already baked in. I think just for that, they are exceptional. If you're going to have a super bus of, you know, knights of some of realm, errant, whatever, grail knights, whatever, a handmaiden being in that unit is a very, very, very yes, good thing.
For sure.
Very good thing. All right. Sergeant at Arms is relatively forgettable. I don't see much point. This is one of the first, I guess, why you hear units in the book. 45 points only. And they add a bit. They got hand weapon, light armor, can have additional hand weapon, halberd, cavalry spear, if appropriately mounted, shield, or can be on a warhorse, and can take up to 25 points of magic stuff. This character, and this is the peasant's duty, this character and any unit they have joined may choose to give ground rather than fall back in good order, and does not have to make a panic test when doing so. So how do you feel about the Sergeant at Arms, mate?
So I love him in two scenarios. Yep. If you're running a large block of men at arms,
we're talking like 30 plus, yeah?
20, I think at about 25, you yep. should put your sergeant at arms in here. So the reason being, men at arms, we'll get to them later, but they're horde, they're warband. He is also warband. So yes. that sergeant of arms, if you put him in a unit of 20 to 25 men at arms, they're now leadership 10. And they have effectively shield wall, because that's what he gives them, right? His yep. Special yep. rule. So that's a full turn of leadership 10 instead of falling back in good order. You're giving ground. Yep. So it's like a one turn of unbreakable, which is absolutely awesome to have. And rerolling panic tests on these little weenie dudes is also very valuable. So I do like him for his points. He's very weak. He dies to a Sif breeze. You probably yeah. want to get he can take 25 points of magic items. You might want to consider giving him something like Armor of Meteoric Iron, so he might yep. survive if someone puts yep. a punch to him. But yeah, I actually do like him. And shockingly, he's strength 4.
Yeah, no, I love that he's strength 4 for no reason whatsoever. He's just been lifting. When all the other men-at-arms have just been like farming, he's just been like pumping iron.
He's pumping iron. So give him Armor, Meteoric Iron, give him the halberd, so that because you yep. can't yep. He can't get better than a 5-plus regularly. So he's got his 5-plus armor that can't be changed. He's going to be strength 5. He's not going to win you the game in theory, but he might hold up a unit long enough for you to get off a flank charge, and that's good enough for me. And correct. If you're building around it.
Dude, you brought me around. I see the merits. I see the good stuff. The next up is the character mounts, which I suppose we can you want to just TLDR all of them together?
Sure. Bretonnian warhorses are the heavy cavalry. They got first charge, their finest warhorses. They got counter charge, aces, 16 points. Warhorses. They're the light cavalry. They're fast cav. They have swift stride. They're okay. Barded Pegasus. It's a Pegasus. You should take it. Royal Pegasus. It's a more expensive Pegasus. Also consider taking this because this one has stomp attacks. You should, and it's 30 more points. If you have the 30 points, do it.
Do it.
Unicorns. Unicorns are for your casters. They've got a kind of cute, beguiling aura that works like 1 in 36 times. But the big thing is that they give your little damsel countercharge so that your unit that has countercharge doesn't lose it. If you want a unicorn, take a goddamn unicorn. They're cute.
Yeah.
But in reality, you don't need to. But I like them. And that's it. So just take the Pegasus. There's another one, the Hippogriff, which isn't listed here. It's a cool model too. But just take the Pegasus if you want to win games. And that's it.
So the Barded versus Royal Pegasus, I think we even have some questions on this in part two, but there is a lively debate as whether 30 points are worth it or not, from 30 to 60 points. In the comparison, they both give you plus one wound. The Royal Peg also gives you plus one toughness. And in addition, its attacks are one better weapon skill being 3 to 4, one better strength being from 4 to 5, and they have one better initiative and one more attack. So it's like one better across the board. In addition, they both have the Royal Peg has Armor Bane on its attacks. They both have counter charge. They both fly 10. They both have Swift Stride. This one has first charge. The Royal Peg has first charge, and it has two stomp attacks. So when you look at it, that has one more attack. Actually, has three more attacks, as long as you can stomp the target, two of which are, primo auto-hitting goodness. So there is a very lively debate between those two, which we'll probably unpack more in part two. Jumping into Knights of the Realm, which is on foot, which is the brand new unit. These are 11 points per model. If you take great weapons, they'll go up to 13. If you want to replace the great weapons, their shields with great weapons, because they come with heavy armor and shields, so they're standing around with a 4+, which is quite nice. You can go to a 12 points per model to replace the shield with the great weapon. 12 points per model for, just a weapon skill 4, strength 5, neg 2, initiative 3, which will go to initiative 6 attack if you get the big old charge. Leadership 8, not bad at all, a return for the points. They come with a couple of other options as well, of course, full command. And they come with Blessings of the Lady, Close Order, Furious Charge, which is quite spicy, and the Knight's Vow. How do you feel about the Knights of the Realm?
I'm back and forth on Knights of the Realm.
Me too.
They feel like, on foot. They feel like we have sword masters at home most of the time.
Yes. Yeah.
That said, I really like Knights of the Realm on foot in Bretonnian Exiles.
Because
they get stubborn and veteran in that army, which makes them infinitely better. But in this, they're okay. I don't think you're making a terrible choice. I think there are better options in your army. But if you're like, I love Bretonnian Exiles, really take a second look at them then. That's what I would have to say about them.
Yeah, agreed. Go on to Squires for us. Tell us a story.
Squires. I love Squires. So Squires are a special choice. They are scouts. Oh, sorry. They have Vanguard, Skirmisher, and they're peasantry. They're open order. They move through cover, which is fantastic. But they can also pay to be scouts and have fire and flee. And that's where I think they really shine, because for 8 or 9 points, depending on if you want to pay for the extra stuff, scouts are very valuable in this game. And having these very cheap guys that can, block off charging lanes or, sink a wound off of a war machine, they're highly prized. And you can redirect charges. It's a little harder to do with skirmishers. Squires are actually pretty legit at it, because they have a decent leadership at 7. Being march blocked is a little harder, and you can kind of go on that diagonal excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Yeah. You can go in this diagonal. And because someone that's charging a skirmisher has to charge the closest model, if you kind of set yourself up on a like a J formation or an arc with your closest model to them being off to the side, but still in line of sight, they have to turn, they have to wheel to hit that guy, yeah. and it takes them right out of position.
Yeah,
and that's so squires are excellent for doing stuff like that.
Spot on. We're going to have to speed this up a little bit because we're half an hour in. It's still got plenty of units to go through. Men-at-arms are, I believe, one of the premium rank and file troops in the game. Yeah, and the fact of the matter is you have to have either one of these or one of the peasant bowmen units. And because squires are so good, I think I like men-at-arms over peasant bowmen. But if you are taking men-at-arms, you're committed to taking, you know, kind of a unit or 20 or bust, because a unit of 10 I don't think is much of a value. They come with a bunch of special rules, like I said, closed order, horde, levies, peasantry, shield wall, and warband. So they are just perfectly poised to do a bunch of that. And with having peasantry as well, their leadership of 5-6 if you have a yeoman or a grail monk, which you will, actually is really well mitigated. The Grail Monk is essentially a second champion. So what's beautiful about this, you know, get charged by a dragon and you just have two rounds of combat of just, okay, the dragon killed one guy because you challenged out, you know, times two, which I like quite a lot. They come with hand weapons, pole arms, and light armor and shield. So they come with a 5-up for an essentially 4-point model. I like that quite a lot for what they get for 4 points. The Grail Monk that you take, the second champion, can also be a blessed triptych, which means they gain the stubborn special rule, which I like quite a lot. I think it is iffy whether or not you need to take it. Mm-hmm. What do you think, mate?
I don't think you need the triptych.
I don't think you need it.
Because it's 25 points on a guy that can be targeted, and that's correct. The only reason. Yeah. And the Grail Monk, he's got a 5-up armor save. So. Yeah. He's going to get dunked immediately.
Yeah.
But you do want the Grail Monk. You do want the double champion.
100%.
And if you're going this route, we talked about how good the Sergeant of Arms was earlier. That also gives you two rounds of protecting your Sergeant at Arms from a challenge. So he can take his two or three attacks into the opposing unit and get you some combat res that way. I really, really like Men-at-Arms. There's the Yeoman Guard that you get access to in the Arcane Journal, which are just these guys, but better.
Superstars.
But in both cases, I love them. I do I've been playing around with Bretonnia lists. I always put a unit of about 25 of these guys in them.
Yeah.
And I often kind of start thinking about taking a Virtue of Empathy paladin,
yeah,
just to make this unit even better. But it's hard to pull the trigger on that. Anyway, it's great. It's a unit that's going to run you like 100 to 200 points once you put the Sergeant at Arms in it, but it's going to do a lot of work for you. You should take them. I highly recommend
100%. Peasant bowmen, exactly what they say on the box. They are peasants with bows. They come in at 5 points per model, a hand weapon, and long bow. Not a save to speak of. They can be upgraded for 1 point per model for light armor. Not even sure that you would bother. Do not do it. The special rules is close order and levies. They have burning brazes, which means you can upgrade them to have flaming attacks. Don't do that either. You can have defensive stakes, which will cost 10 points per unit. The fact that like flaming attacks is 20 points, 120%. Do not do that.
It's expensive.
It's just too expensive. It's too expensive for a rule that like kind of doesn't really matter that much. Defensive stakes, though, is up in the air. As soon as you move, you do lose the stakes. But if you're getting charged by a unit, and if the role of this unit is to be deployed and like, you know, make sure a trebuchet shoots for another turn because you're just going to get in the way, deploy them in the way. You can make cavalry and chariots and a lot of those fast cav things that will come hunting your war machines, take dangerous terrains when they charge these guys. And of course, you'll get a stand and shoot as well. So you can make them a little bit less of a target, you know, worth hunting, but I think keep them cheap as possible from my mind.
I'm fully on board with taking two or three units of these guys either as skirmishers for 50 points or with stakes for 60 if you are planning on taking trebuchets.
Yeah.
If you're not running trebuchets or cannons, take them as skirmishers, use them to clog up your opponent's lanes because they're cheap as chips. They might kill a guy with their shooting. It's highly unlikely. Don't be upset when they do nothing for you. Their whole goal is to take up space.
Correct. Once again, I said we had to speed up. We're absolutely not. Battle Pilgrims and the Grail Reliquary. 8 points per model for a leadership 8 unit, plus 65 if you want to take the Grail Reliquary. But it is 6 wounds with 6 attacks at the same profile as the rest of the unit. And when it's 8 points, what's 8 by 6? 48. So you're only paying, what, 17 points? For the all the reliquary special rules, when you kind of think about it like that, that it takes essentially 6 battle pilgrims in a trench coat, and it brings the blessing of the lady, of course. So it itself gets a ward save, and it has hatred all enemies, levies, peasantry, a retinue of the saints, and stubborn. The rest of the unit, of course, also has open order, hatred, levies, peasantry, and stubborn. The Grail Reliquary rules is when it's placed, it has to be placed in the center of the front rank. Only counts as having 2 models in the front rank, and then it's 2-2-2 into the second and the third. It can't lose any wounds whilst there's any other battle pilgrims remaining in the unit. And it's both counts as a standard bearer and a musician of the unit. And whilst it's within 12 of a friendly model with the Grail Veil and is not that is not fleeing, it gains immune to psychology and unbreakable special rules. And you can include 1 Grail Reliquary for every character or unit with the Grail Veil. How do you toss these up? Because these are still, I think, a very powerful unit and very unique unit. It ain't going to kill a single freaking thing because they are weapons kill 2, strength 3 with 1 attack apiece. But for just sheer getting in the wayness, this guy is a superstar.
Yep, I would say highly consider running a squad of these guys because Unbreakable is hard to come by in this game. You get it for pretty cheap. I would say if you're not going to run the men at arms we talked about earlier, well, yeah, because you're going to take bowmen instead, take a big block of these guys and clog up your middle with them. Yeah. That's it.
That's it. That's it, man. Knights Errant time. We're starting to totally get into the core identity of the army. Take it away.
Knights Errant. They are the ridiculously cheap baby knights. They're only strength 3. They come with lances, heavy armor, and shield, so they're going to be with barding a 4 up armor. A 3 up armor save. They're going to be strength 5 on the charge. They're only leadership 7. They have close order. They have all the other stuff, first charge. They don't have counter charge. And they're impetuous, so half the time they're going to charge even if you don't want them to, which kind of sucks. But they're only 19 points for a 3+ armor save unit. I personally don't like them too much, except in the Crusade detachment that you get access to in the Arcane Journal, where they get rerolls to hit. But as they are, I'm not as big a fan.
The knightly vow that they have, and of course we're going to discuss the vows as we go through them on the relevant units, so we don't have to review them again later, pretty much just means they ignore peasantry panics and any peasantry related things that require leaderships. So they don't care. They've got disdain. But I think Impetuous holds this back a lot because you just 50-50 the units out of your control. And for 19 points a model, they're not expensive as far as knights go, but they ain't cheap. Yeah, you don't want, you know, a unit of 5 of these guys being just under 100 points, just running off to their doom into like a unit that they have no ability to handle. Mounted Knights of the Realm, which we're about to go into, is a much better unit. 5 points per model more than a Knight Errant, so that's 24 points per model, but you get an additional weapon skill. You still only have strength 3, toughness 3, which is totally fine. They come with the same armor save and lances. You have just pretty much 1 more weapon skill, 1 more leadership is what you're paying the 5 points for. But to not have the downside of Impetuous and also have the special rules of blessings, close order, counter charge being a big one. Finest war horses, first charge, lance, swift stride, and the knights of vow again. I think this is a much better unit. And considering this, you have to take either this or the guys on foot. I think one of these guys is worth the investment, one of these units. And I definitely like a unit of at least 5 of these in most, if not every army. How do you feel?
Yes, 100%. If I, most of my Brett lists that I start with, I start with a unit of 6 minimum. Sometimes I pump them up to like 9 if I want to have like a big chonky one. And that's like, that's my go-to unit that I'm going to put my damsel in or whatever. So
yeah, damsel and BSB is where I usually see. Yeah, very good home here. Mounts and Knights of Realms, I think it's as far as the mandatory core units in the game that you have to take, you don't feel bad at all taking a unit of Knights of the Realm. At least I don't think so.
No, I agree.
All right, into questing knights. So this is 2 points per model more than a mounted Knights of the Realm. The Knights of the Realm are core. These guys are special, so they're definitely taking a different pool of points. For those two more points, you get a base strength of 4, a weapon skill of 5. So 2 points more, you get one more strength and one more weapon skill and one more initiative. It's actually, you get a lot for that, for those 2 points. And in addition, they come with great weapons, heavy armor and shield. So the same save against missile weapons, but then one less into the combat, but then they go with strength 6 AP too. It's very hard. I'm finding it very hard to quantify how good questing knights are. In when I talk about and just see them, like see the stats and stuff and what you get for the 26 points, I'm genuinely impressed. I'm generally pretty high on them. But then when I try and put them in a list, I'm like, they never really make the cut that much. How do you feel?
I agree. And the main reason is Pegasus Knights, in my opinion.
Correct. They're soaking up all those special points.
They really are. Because questing knights are stubborn. That's what the questing vow gives you, which is fantastic. They're strength 6 all the time. So even if you get blunted or anything like that, you're still swinging at strength 6. So they're like, I want to love them, and I make lists where I try to fit them in, and then I say, I don't have enough Pegasus Knights in my list. And that's generally where the problem lies. So if we ever see a change to how Pegasus Knights play, I think Questing Knights have a real place in the army.
Waiting in the wings. And you would not feel stupid running a decent size unit of these.
If I saw someone running a squad of 5 or 6 of these guys, like, or more even, I would not be shocked, because like, they're always going to be strength 6, and that's something you had to consider.
I genuinely like them a lot, which I can't say the same for the Grail Knights. Unfortunately, when you just talk about what you get for the points, Questing Knights is good point per value on the unit, on the just the data sheet. Grail Knights, I think, are unfortunately kind of the opposite. 38 points, so 12 points more than a Questing Knight. You got hand weapon, lances, heavy armor, and shield. So same kind of stuff. You got the barding on the barded warhorse. So they go, but these guys have a 2-up or a 3-up?
They have a 3-up.
Ba-bow, wrong answer. That's the wrong number. Because for 38 points, I would freaking love them to have a 2-up. There's my first issue, which I knew the answer of. Web skill 6 is very nice. Strength of toughness 4, also very nice. Initiative 5, 2 attacks apiece. You know, that's what we would expect from a premium cavalry unit. But 38 points for one wound is a hard pill to swallow when you unpack the rest of it. Of course, they have Blessing of the Lady, Close Order, Counter Charge, Finest War Horses, First Charge, Lance Formation, Living Saints, Swift Stride, and the Grail Vow. The Grail Vow meaning they always have a 6, they always have the Blessing of the Lady, regardless of whether you pray or not. So that 38 points, I believe, is so high because they're just baked in to always have the invuln, and you're always going to have to pay for it. And I think you're paying overs for that. I'd love to see them as 3 or 4 points less even. But each model and every model in the Grail Knight unit can issue and accept challenges in the same manner as a character. So there are some really cute things you can do with this, especially if you're really worried about the dragon meta, so to speak, that some people are bemoaning. You just have 3 Grail Knights that can just kind of keep them there for 3 turns. On leadership 9, you know, have a BSB hanging out nearby and a general hanging out nearby and just kind of hang out for 3 turns and see if you can make them 3 turns of challenges and just keep it there for a turn and a half. So there are some cute things you can do, but man, 38 points, it's a bit of a hard pill to swallow. How do you feel?
Yeah, I don't like them. I thought when the book first came out, maybe 1 or 2 minimum units of 3. They're just not worth it.
I agree. They always end up being cut for me. And in the list that I've run, I always add 2 units of 3 in, and I'll be like, cool, I'll cut one now and give me a bit of points. Blah, 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 blah. And then, I always end up cutting the second one.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a shame. I'd love them to be better. Like, I'd love to see like a single unit of 5 just in a line. Don't bother making it lance. Just rock them up, roll them up, see what happens. But they just don't do enough for me. But then we come to the best unit in the book. Take it away, mate.
Pegasus Knights. So Pegasus Knights, they're 55 points a model, but you get so much value for those 55 points. Their weapon skill 4, strength 4, toughness 4. They're 2 wounds a pop. They have an initiative of 3. They have 1 attack each. They come with lances, heavy armor, shields, and barding. So they're a 3-up armor save for those 2 wounds. They have the Blessing of the Lady. They have counter charge. They have dispersed formation, which means even though they're skirmishers, when they're in skirmish formation, they can be 2 inches apart instead of 1, which is huge. They have first charge, furious charge. So they're actually almost always going to have 2 attacks each. They're fly 10. And they can be in lance formation. Who cares? And they have swift stride. They come with the knight's vow. This, like, the thing you just need to understand, and we kind of brought it up already, Because of that 360 line of sight, because they fly 10, Pegasus Knights are brutal. They'll almost always be able to charge whenever they want. Yeah. And they're going to hit you from weird angles. They're going to get flank charges and rear charges off all the time because they don't have to spend the time to turn around to get those charges off. You can't just kind of finagle your way around their line of sight. It doesn't matter for them. They're absolutely brutal. They're worth every point. You need to run at least four. You probably want to run two units or one gigantic, stupid unit because they're 3+ and just go to town.
Yep. I like 2/4s personally.
I do too.
That's my favorite configuration, and then add characters or take them off depending on the matchup. You know, those characters that join them can just easily be hanging out behind them and going doing their own thing. We know how much people love the Captuses and the single peg lords in all the Empire armies in 8th edition. Essentially, that nothing has changed. These guys are just absolute superstars at every level. They are one of the fastest, most dynamic units in the game. They in an army that is predicated on being an incredible army on the charge and then mediocre when not on the charge, this is a unit that just gets the charge at wills. And that's why they are everything a Bretonian unit and an army wants it to be. And I can't say anything else about them. They're just fantastic.
And I love giving them that magic standard that gives you 100 points if you capture an opponent's magic standard. because like somebody's going to run some stupid little, like, I don't know, like Illyrian Reaver squad, and they put a banner in it because they're banner. And then you're just like aces. You just gave me 100 points for my 40. Yeah. Take it every time. Anyway.
They're so good. Mounted Yeomen are up next. These guys are essentially your fast cav. They have fast cav, fire and flea, levies, open order, peasantry, reserve move, skirmishes, and swift stride. 13 points a model. Of course, they are light cav. They come with hand weapon, cavalry, spears, and short bows. You can take light armor and shields as well. I'm not sure if you would bother because then that 13 points blows out to 16 points per model. Mm-mm, and they're actually starting to look quite pricey at that point. I think they are a very good unit, by the way. I think I actually really like Mounted Yeomen. I think they're necessaries.
I love them, and if I ran them, I would always pay for Feigned Flight because the combination of Fire and Flea and Feigned Flight is
wonderful. So annoying. All of a sudden, they feel like elves. They feel like elf fast cav.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, they're awesome. They're going to do a million things for you. Run either like a squad of 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 if you want to, or just like 2 squads of 5. They're amazing.
Yep, agree. All right, we got 2 more to go. We got the Hippogriff, which we talked of before. It's 120 points, double the points of the Royal Peg, which for me is the thing that kills it because it only gives you the same strength and the same toughness as the Royal Peg. It does give you 3 more wounds, whereas the Royal Peg gives you 1. It does mean that you are a monstrous creature, you are a large target, and arguably it is quite a bit better in combat, being strength 5, neck 2 on its attacks, and has a single base strength, armor bane 2, multi-wounds 2 attack that you must make 1 attack with, and has 4 attacks, so it'll have 1 attack at that and 3 attacks at the other. I'd much rather just have all attacks at strength 5 AP 2 than 1 attack at strength 5 AP nothing, and a 6 maybe it does something into a good target. D3 stomps, close order, counter charge, fly 9, it's quite nice and a big target as well. And swift stride and terror. I personally prefer the pecs over and above the group of grief. I don't think it's bad, and I don't think it's a wrong choice. But because the benefits of having the pegs being able to join all the peg units is the reason I think it wins out every time now, because it leans into the archetype, leaves into the what I think are the best things that you have going for you. I still don't think it's a bad option, though. You won't feel bad about taking a super duke or a super baron on a hippogriff.
Yeah, and the other thing about the hippogriff is there are a couple of virtues that don't allow you to join units if you, and they're pretty strong. If they you're going to go with one of those virtues, then yes, now consider the hippogriff for that extra points because you're going to that bumping up to 6 wounds is a big deal.
It is,
but otherwise, I would almost always take one of the Pegasi instead.
Yep. How do you feel about the trebuchet? Was the last one?
In theory I want to love it because it's like a strength 10 pinpoint cannon that is super unreliable, but if you do manage to get that center circle on something, D3+1 wounds is nice. At the same time, because of the nerfs to artillery in general, especially templates, it can be a hard pill to swallow. If you're really good at rolling direct hits, man, it's amazing.
100 points is not breaking the bank, but it's not cheap either. Lovingly, it's still strength 5 under the template, which is quite nice. We have so many others that are strength 3 and strength 4. So strength 5 is quite nice. And once again, strength 10 under the hull is superb. So it has that duality of, you know, not being, you do not mind just throwing this thing at a monster and getting a hit. It is unmovable. You're never going to get out of dodge. If they've got a charge on you, then you're going to get charged. And yeah, once they get there, it's essentially just some men at arms trying to defend it. So it will die. I don't actually know, man. I'm with you. I swing like the trebuchet on this. I'm like, take two. They're amazing. And then like, take none. Get more nonsense in your army. You're better off just taking more chaff and more. Britonia, the whole army list and the overriding identity is about being a proactive army. I am an army that is proactive. I want to be hunting, pushing, and aggressive. And then taking 200 points of your army that needs to be defended just feels like it's counterintuitive to me in a lot of ways. Yeah. I would much rather have 200 points because like I said, I just said 200 points need to be defended because your opponent will just have like one fast cav unit that'll go and kill both of them in one on turn two, one on turn three, unless you stop them. And you don't really have the firepower to stop them. So you have to stop them with melee units, which is, diverting more points from the primary objective, or you have to buy other units like Peasant Bowman to defend them. And all of a sudden it's not 200 points. It's more like 300 points that you're investing into these two trebuchets. So a lot of the time I end up not taking any at the moment. I end up taking zero. And I just take more fast cav, more men at arms, and yeah. Yeah.
And it's a shame.
It's a shame. But I do not think they're a bad choice. I straight up still don't think they're a bad choice.
No. I think they're fine. No. I think this book has a lot of bangers and it's got a lot of stuff that's on the edge of greatness.
I agree. Questing Knight is the one I want. I want to feel like Questing Knights are where I want to be because I think they're my favorite knight for sure.
It's just because you have a hard-on about great weapons, my guy. You talk about them in chat all the time.
They're too good. Great weapons. Great weapons is the premium weapon of all old world. Jeez. All right. We're into the knightly virtues. We're going to do these three or four at a time. Just read out three or four and discuss them. Just to bundle them up. Jumping into the virtue of knightly temper. And of course, these are the specific upgrades that you can take for your characters, a la akin to Marks of Chaos, akin to big names and many other variants. So the extra bit of customization you get out to your characters. Virtue of knightly temper, 70 points. During a turn in which it charged, a model with this virtue gains the extra attack D3 and hatred all enemies' special rules. So plus D3 attacks and rerolls to hit on that first turn on that charge. Virtue of heroism is 60 points. Unless using a magic weapon, a model with this virtue gains a killing blow and monster slayer special rules. So usually you'd say that's a lance or a great weapon that you'll be equipped with. Virtue of stoicism, 55 points. A model with this virtue and any and its unit may reroll the 2d6 for making a break test. I'm not sure that one's worth it. And virtue of the penitent is 50 points. Duke, baron, or paladin only. A character with this virtue gains the unbreakable rule. However, they can never join a friendly unit. So gives and taketh away. How do you feel about the first four?
Virtue of knightly temper is fantastic. It's very, you're paying for it, right? Plus D3 attacks is great. Hatred is rerolls. Rerolls are a premium in this game. Mm. I highly recommend if you have a way to get them, you try to get them. 70 points is a lot. Virtue of heroism, monsters are scary as all shit in this edition.
Yes.
So getting Killing Blow and Monster Slayer both for 60 mm-hmm. points on units that are going to have either ridiculous magic weapons but they're going to have lances or great weapons is perfect. And the other thing you need to understand about knightly virtues is at least currently, or until we get an FAQ, as far as I understand it, these apply to the mount because core rulebook says that, especially unless they say otherwise, special rules that apply to the ride are also special bound to the mount. So now you're Hippogriffs and your Royal Pegasi also have Monster Slayer and Killing Blow. Crazy. Virtue of Stoicism, it's okay. Virtue of the Penitent, wouldn't take it if you threatened to murder me, unless I did, because I don't think Unbreakable is worth it, and I want someone to prove me wrong, but just don't do it. If you're by yourself, just not worth it. I don't see it.
The only way I'd see it as worth it is if, like in 8th edition, I would say it was worth it because we had hordes and huge amounts of points sunk into big units. And if you just got a guy that had a great save, made him unbreakable, and just chucked him in to hold up, 500, 600 points of your opponent's army, 100% that could be doable. 100% that's it. But as a game sits right now, probably not the right time for it, if at all.
Exactly.
The next bundle, Virtue of the Ideal.
I'm reading it. You can't stop me from doing flavor text.
Do it. I know what you're trying to do. I'm trying to speed this thing up. Okay, do it. Do it.
Virtue of the ideal. Unmatched was Landuin, his chivalry above all others. Alas, as great was his skill, so too was his arrogance. This is 45 points. You can put it on Dukes, Barons, and Paladins. A character with this virtue has a +1 modifier to weapon skill, initiative, attacks, and leadership. However, this character cannot be your army's general or join a unit. Virtue of the impetuous knight. In the glory of the charge was Balduin most alive. Though others better controlled their ardor, he was ever in the forefront of battle. A model with this virtue gains the impetuous special rule. Meh. In addition, this model and its unit increase its maximum possible charge range by 3 inches, and when they make a charge roll, they get to apply a D3 modifier to the result. Virtue of audacity. A master of feint and riposte, Angelgar's skill at turning an enemy's skill against them was legendary. A model with this virtue may reroll any fail roll to hit made against an enemy model with a higher weapon skill characteristic than it for 35 points. Finally, the virtue of purity for 30 points. Chaste and untainted by base emotions, Duke Redmond was the lady's most virtuous champion. A model with this virtue always benefits from blessings of the lady and always has a 5+ ward save, even if this model's army did not pray at the start of the game. What are your thoughts?
I like quite a few of these. Agreed. I mean, the one with Impetuous can jump straight off a cliff. I've got no time for that. Even if the buff it does give is pretty spicy and relevant, Impetuous is just too bad of a downside. Unless you are making like just a superstar unit that is good into everything, and that unit may exist in the future. I don't like that one. Apart from the others, all seem very takeable. Reroll failed hits against something with a higher weapon skill than you. So you're essentially hitting on fours rerolling, because these are your all weapon skill 5 or 6 or 7. Actually, I think they were 6 or 7. So essentially, you're just hitting on fours rerolling into anything, or just hitting on threes. That's actually not too bad. And then a constant 5+ ward, not bad at all. But Virtue of the Ideal is the one I like the most. 45 points is steep, but everything it gives you is premium. +1 whip skill, initiative, attacks, and leadership. But you can't be the general. Is that meaning that it can be the BSB, though?
Matt, nothing says it can't be the BSB. Yeah. So like putting this on a Baron or a Paladin on a Pegasus, yep, and having it fly around by itself just trying to murder stuff, or this is your Hippogriff guy, right?
That's what I was thinking.
So he gets a bunch of extra rules and correct, he starts smoking stuff. I do like Impetuous Knight potentially. I haven't taken it, but if I did, I'd put it on like a character I'm putting with a unit of Pegasus Knights just to make them even like have an even greater threat range, because Impetuous doesn't matter as much for them. And yeah, the other ones are fine. Virtue of Purity is basically getting a Talisman of Protection that doesn't take up a magic item slot.
Exactly right.
So that's great.
All right. Virtue of Duty is up next, 25 points. Duke, Baron, or Paladin only, unless the general of the army, of their army, has been removed from play as a casualty. When calculating his combat res, this character may claim a bonus of +1 combat res to the result. This character can open your army general or join a friendly unit. I don't know why this one isn't join a friendly unit, because the whole point of this is to add a combat res to a thing. So this is counterintuitive to me. Virtue of the Joust, 20 points. A model with his virtue may reroll all fail to hit rolls when using a lance. I like this one very much, possibly the very best one for 20 points. So good. Virtue of Confidence is 15 points. A model with his virtue must always issue and accept challenges. During a challenge, this model may reroll failed hit rolls. My lord, is there so many rerolled failed hit rolls in this thing. This is, they are the, if you want your unit, if you want your model, your character to reroll to hit, you just have to pay enough points and they're going to be able to do it. I might just do the rest of them. Virtue of Noble Disdain
for 10 points. Bitch.
I'll leave you the last one. Virtue of Noble Disdain for 10 points. A model with this virtue may reroll any fail to hit made during the first round of combat when engaged with an enemy unit equipped with any missile weapon. My man, he just hate this. A Virtue of Discipline is 5 points. A model with this virtue and his unit can march whilst within 8 without having to make the leadership test. And you got the last one, baby.
The virtue of empathy. A champion of the people, Matrude fought shoulder to shoulder with the peasants he protected. This is Dukes, Barons, and Paladins. A character with a virtue can join a unit with the peasantry special rule.
Kind only 5 points. Only 5 points. Yeah. How do you feel about the last pack of 6? I think Virtue of the Joust is the absolute freaking superstar gold standard.
It's for 20 fantastic. Points. It is fantastic. Virtue of Confidence is cute if you take the common magic item where they have to accept your challenges.
Correct.
And you build yourself for challenges. Virtue of Duty, I'm not a fan. I can see a world where you build a BSB with like a war banner and probably a hippogriff or something so you get benefit of close order. And you try – I don't even know if a paladin can be on hippogriff, so maybe I'm wrong here.
Yeah.
But you're trying to give yourself as much combat res as possible with one dude. I'm not into it though. I don't think it's
– I'm not into it at all.
Unless you can get like 7 or 8, which character, like if your character can do that, go to town. Not for me. Noble Disdain's okay. It's very situational, so I probably would never take it. Virtue of Discipline, eh. Virtue of Empathy, I do like it in specific circumstances. And yeah, that's it.
So Virtue of Noble Disdain is the one where you get rerolls against things with missile weapons. If you are in a meta where elves and they're, you know, the absolute bastards that are wood elves or skink players, you know, said company withstanding, this guy just goes in and annihilates them. You just be happy with just a cheapest chip guy on the cheapest peg with just a lance for 10 points, that guy is just a murder machine against those units now.
Skinks are weapon skill 2, toughness 2. He's doing it anyway.
That's fair. He's murdering them to death anyway. That's fair. It's more of the elves then. Hitting the elves 3s, re-rolling, then killing them on 2s because you got a lance, because you take a lance. That guy's legit. I like that. That's the only one I'd add into anything you said. I will let you do the magic weapons for us. And we're going to do all the magic weapons as one and then discuss them as a bundle. So take it away.
Thank you, buddy. I found that virtues were nice because they brought up people's names. Okay, I just need to clear my throat. Dickie, edit that out. Okay, here we go. The Sword of the Quest. This large hand and a half sword has been passed down from knight to knight, aiding generations of heroes on their noble quests. It's a 70-point magic item with 2 profiles. You can be strength plus 1, AP minus 1, and strike first, or you can be strength plus 2, AP 2, multiple wounds 2, requires 2 hands, and strike last. You must choose which profile you're going to use at the start of each round of a combat. Next, we have the Sword of Heroes. This mighty blade has powerful enchantments against evil bound into it. Its long and bloody history has seen its wielders kill enough fantastical creatures to fill a menagerie many times over. It's 60 points. It's got Monster Slayer. It's Strength User. That seems like bad, but Monster Slayer. And when you make a wound roll with the Sword of Heroes, a roll of 5 plus is always a success, regardless of the target's toughness. That seems sweet. The Heartwood Lance. This unbreakable lance is crafted from the heart of a major oak, the largest tree in Bretonnia, which was shattered by lightning the moment Gills, or Jills as some would say, was struck down. The Heartwood Lance is strength plus 3, holy patoli, AP minus 3. It can only be wielded by cavalry and monster units, and it can only be used on the turn in which the wielder charged. And finally, for 40 points, you have the Morning Star of Fracas, which is 40 points. This mighty Morning Star is a hatred of magical trickery and unholy artifacts. It will entangle and rip a magic weapon from the hands of any foe. It's strength plus 1. It's AP minus 1. Any magic weapon carried by an enemy model that suffers 1 or more unsaved wounds from the Morning Star of Fracas is destroyed and cannot be used for the remainder of the game. Holy shit.
Yeah, that Morning Star of Focaccia is pretty good, right?
The Morning Star of Focaccia is decent. The Heartwood Lance.
Heartwood Lance.
I love the Heartwood Lance. The Sword of Heroes, it's okay. It's Monster's Lair, and always wounds on a 5 plus is okay. Sword of the Quest, I don't know. I don't know if it's worth 70 points.
Multiple wounds 2 is the best version of multi-wounds that we get because I think 2 is better than D3.
I agree with that.
But 70 points is very steep. So the interesting thing, and I'll always say this with Bretonnian, is more than just about anything else except maybe Orcs and Goblins, Bretonnians have an amazing default weapon. If you just default to a lance, even on heroes and characters, and you invest everything in the defensive stats and the virtues and stuff, you still end up with a very, very punchy character. But in saying that, like Heartwood Lance is Chef's freaking kiss. What a baller of a weapon. And then I don't know. I don't actually know if the focaccia mace is any good, though.
No, I don't know. It depends on your meta. It's cool. If you've been hit with Vols on making before, you know that it sucks. Yeah. It's situational. I don't know. Like, if I had 40 extra points, which I like, that's a lot.
No.
But I do love Heartwood Lance. Of these, I probably Heartwood Lance would be the one I would consider. Yeah.
If monsters are running absolutely buck wild in your meta and you want to get a little bit of respect, by all means, take the Sword of Heroes. I'm not sure if they'll respect it, because without any AP, a two up, two up, four up, five up, you know, Chaos freaking Dragon Lord is not going to give a crap about your AP nothing, you know, wounding on five up attacks. At best, you're going to have five attacks hitting on, what, fours into that guy, wounding on fives. Maybe he has to take one save. He's not going to care. That's fine. He'll just kill you. And that's if you got to fight first. So but you will get a bit more respect. You will make them pause. You'll make them think. And that's what I think you're paying the 60 points for more than anything else.
So something that I need to look at real quick, because I do think like there's a potential there with your Prophetess. Can you cast an assailment spell if you are relegated to the back of your unit?
Ooh, I actually have no idea.
Because that makes a difference there. Because if you have that protection and you're still allowed to cast an assailment spell, then maybe that's a cute thing you might be able to try with your illusion prophetess.
Yeah, so. I love the idea of that. I want that to be a thing. One sec, I'm just having a look at Killing Blow. Because Killing Blow always used to ignore saves. Not permitted in armor or regeneration save. Sorry. So yeah, the two up, he's just going to have his four up or five up ward save to dodge the.
And I would say they don't get it because it says they cannot make any attacks or have direct attacks directed at them. So never mind. Don't do that unless you're not doing Lance formation. So just ignore what I was just saying.
Yeah. And my point about monster player still stands though. Like to some extent,
I agree.
It's more to get respect than. So I totally forgot for some reason that it. When I said my wild statement that it ignored armor saves and regeneration saves, which of course it always has. But the fact is most of them have a five up or a four up ward save. So you got what? Even your Duke has got four attack space or five attack space? I think it's five attack space.
Five attack space.
Yeah, it's going to hit a Chaos Lord or a Elf Lord on fours, which is going to go to better side of it is three attacks, and then you're going to wound on a five, which is one wound, and then it's a 50-50. But hey, man, if you just put the fear of God into them, I actually don't mind that. But and that's if those monsters are running away in your meta. And of course, you have another access to Monster Slayer as well, which you can also double down on if you want to go that hard skew.
Yeah, right, Magic I would Arms. Probably do the other one if I was going to do anything.
Me too. Because you anyway. just take a good weapon and take a Monster Slayer from your virtue. Magic Armors, Gilded Cuirass, 60 points. It's suit of heavy armor. In addition to this wearer has the 5-up regeneration special rule, I quite like. 40 points for the Grommel Great Helm, may be worn in addition to other armor. Improves your armor save by 1 to a maximum 2+. In addition, the bear may reroll any natural armor save rolls of a 1. Very nice.
It's amazing.
Auto freaking take.
Yes.
Windmill Slam. Yeah. Find a character, invent a character to take it.
Yep.
Talismans, Mantle of the Damsel Elena, 25 points. Bearer is immune to the poison attack special rule. If the bearer is wounded by an attack with this special rule, they just have to be rolled to wound as normal. And then Sirene's Locket, which is 25 points. Models with the troop type is infantry or cavalry only. The bearer is immune to multi wounds special rule. And if they do have this special rule, instead you just take one wound. How do you feel about that four pack?
Grommel Gatehelm, incredible.
Incredible.
Gilded Cuirass, it's okay. I think there's better armor options, but a regen is good. And you have a baked-in ward save, so it is something to consider.
Yeah. It's the easiest way to three saves on something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Talismans, flat garbage.
Absolute trash. Yeah.
Yeah. Flat garbage.
Is that you saying that because you're trying to juke people away from the anti-poison meta? Hey. That's fine. It's not good.
It's not good, guys. Don't do it.
All the magic standards are yours, mate.
Oh, Okay. The Valorous Standard, 60 points. Knights who ride under this banner sing lustily and cry in joy for the sheer love of battle.
It's a lusty standard. That's a Slaaneshi standard if I ever saw one.
That's true. A unit carrying the Valorous Standard rolls 3d6 when making a break test and discards the highest result.
60 points? Piss off.
It's very expensive for old cold-blooded.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The Conqueror's Tapestry, 40 points. The morning after a battle, the victorious knights awaken to find their exploits depicted within this enchanted tapestry. An enemy standard captured by a unit carrying the Conqueror's Tapestry is worth 100 victory points as a trophy.
Oof.
I already mentioned earlier, I do like this on like a unit of Pegasus Knights or a big one in particular. But it's not like a must have. It's just kind of, it's cute and it will get you some extra points. Errantry Banner, 30 points. This tattered banner has traveled the length and the breadth of the old world and beyond, instilling its bearers with fiery zeal. All models in a unit carrying the Errantry Banner have a +1 modifier to their strength characteristic when they charge. However, they also gain the Impetuous Special Rule. And shittily enough... Knights Errant can only take a 25-point banner.
I know.
No, they did this on purpose.
Such bullshit.
And then a banner of Chalon. The banner of Chalon. Awestruck enemies are unable to tear their gaze away from this magnificent banner. It's 20 points. Enemy units cannot declare a stand-and-shoot charge reaction against a unit carrying the banner of Chalon.
This is a French-Scottish mongrel accent you had just then.
I'm just going to tell you, that's how all the French people here talk. I live in New Brunswick, Canada. Half of our population in this province is French. I promise you, all of them sound exactly like that. Anybody that's Acadian that's listening to this knows it's true. I will be canceled when this is over, but I'm going down swinging.
He is. Valorous Standard, who cares? 60 points, sweet Jesus. That is way too many. Conqueror's Tapestry gives you such a unique thing. There are very, very, very few things in the game that just translate to I get more points at the end of this. And because of that, I think that is a very highly sought after and highly prized thing, because it gives you something that's just so unique and so hard for people to quantify. And yet it can just win you a game. It can just straight up just win you a game. It's very few times you can just pay 40 points to be like, I could just win a game I was going to lose because of this 40-point upgrade. Fan-fucking-tastic.
Yep. I've played in my last four games, three of them have been within 200 points in terms
I'm finding that a lot.
Yeah. So, like having a Conqueror's Tapestry would be huge for me because it probably would give me the win in a couple of them instead of a draw.
Errantry Banner can unfortunately piss right off. 30 points to downgrade my unit just as much as I'm upgrading my unit. I'm not paying points for that. Sorry. Impetuous and +1 strength are probably about equal. And the fact that essentially that could be free, 0 points, and I still might not take it because essentially they both cancel each other out. I'm giving my unit a premium buff that only works on the charge, but I may not have control over them and when they charge. So it's a very hard sell for me. And the Banner of Chalons, depends on the meta. If you're playing against a lot of Dakar dwarves or the blunderbuss freaking chaos dwarf units, maybe this is worth it for 20 points. But I think it's a meta pick for that one.
For sure, I agree.
All right, moving on to the enchanted items. The Falcon Horn of Fredmund for 40 points. During the command subphase of their turn, if they are not engaged in combat, this character may attempt to use the Falcon Horn by rolling a leadership test on their unmodified leadership. Until the start of your next turn subphase, enemy units cannot use the Fly X special rule. I like this quite a lot. Antlers of the Great Hunt is up next for 25 points. If the wearer of the Antlers of the Great Hunt is mounted on a barred warhorse or a warhorse, they can, any unit they join, gains the move through cover special rule. So 25 points for move through cover. And then Gauntlets of the Duel is the common magic item, enchanted item. It's got the asterisk, so you can take it multiple times for 5 points. Challenges issued by the bearer of the gauntlet cannot be refused. And for 5 points, I actually quite like that sprinkled around a couple of times, maybe two times in a list. The enchanted items I quite love. Once again, you have a very unique thing here in the Falcon Horn, something that's very hard to find. And when you're playing a unit that is Fly 10 and you come into the mirror match and one of you has the Falcon Horn and one of you doesn't, well, the one that does is the one that gets to do all the charging. The other one just kind of has to stand around. So especially in the mirror match, I really like the Falcon Horn. How do you feel about him?
I especially now with this turning in some ways into like a scary dragon meta, having another way to kind of pseudo shut down on top of shutting down Pegasus Knights and stuff like that is aces. It is very expensive, but also it's not single use.
No.
There's only, I think, one other magic item in this game that shuts down fly, and forgive me if I'm wrong, and it's the Storm Banner for Skaven.
Storm Banner, Skaven,
and
yeah.
60 points, and you can only use it once per game. This thing is, all like, every turn you can try to pop this off on a leadership test, so it's pretty sweet.
It's absolutely cranked for 40 points, and I think very necessary. I think this gives you a lot of power and control, especially in, you know, with the proliferation of fly. Fly is just so powerful.
Yeah.
And you being able to say, oh, you invested heavily in fly as well. Well, it turns out you didn't, because only I get to fly this game. And then you start doing the dance. Tell us about the arcane items.
So we have the Silver Mirror for 35 points. It's back. This lethal trinket is at first sight merely a vanity mirror, but woe betide the magic user that underestimates its true abilities. It's a single use, which is kind of meh, but the bearer of the Silver Mirror may use it when attempting a wizardly dispel. If they do so, they roll an extra d6 and discard the lowest result. If a double one is rolled, the bearer is outclassed in the art. If the dispel attempt is successful, the spell is dispelled and the casting wizard suffers a strength 4 hit with an AP of 2. Sacrament of the Lady, common magic item, 30 points. These thin, translucent wafers have been blessed by the lady herself and imbued with a fragment of her power. These are basically Tim Tams, is how I picture them.
Yeah, 100% Tim Tams.
They're single-use Tim Tams. The bearer of a sacrament of the lady may use it before making a casting roll. If they do, they get to apply +2 to the casting roll. Note that this does not negate a natural double one. And finally, the prayer icon of Jonathan Quinnell is 25 points. When opened, this prayer icon displays a meticulously rendered image of the lady that inspires unfettered devotion. The bearer of the prayer icon of Jonathan Quinnell increases their dispel range by 3 inches. Additionally, when attempting to dispel a hex spell, the bearer of the prayer icon of Jonathan Quinnell gains +1 to their dispel result.
We're just never going to explain that one, by the way. You either you know or you don't. How do you feel about these? The Silver Mirror is too many points for me, 35 for a single use. It's what it gives you is quite good. Actually, what all of these give you is quite good. Like 30 points for a single use +2 to cast, though, is once again too many points.
I would compare these to their core rule book.
The generic counterparts.
Yeah, so like a dispel scroll is 20 points.
Yeah.
It does the exact same thing as the first part of the Silver Mirror. So you're paying 15 points for a strength 4 AP 2 hit.
Not worth it.
Now, a Sacrament of the Lady, a power scroll is, I believe, also 20 points. Forgive me if I'm wrong, and it's like 25. You get to roll 3 dice, drop the lowest. In this case, you just get a flat +2 for 10 more points. I will say I think I like the flat +2 better than rolling 3 dice, drop the lowest, because
I do also
increase the chance of the double one.
Yeah. If it's only 5 points between the two, if it's 25 to 30, I think if you were going to take a power scroll, then this is better.
I agree with that. I still don't know if it's worth it. The prayer icon, I think, is worth it at 25 points.
I do as well.
+3 inches on your dispel range is very helpful. And getting a +1 on hexes. Hexes are some of the scariest thing in the game for you.
Is the no charge illusion spell a hex?
Yes.
They're already worth it. Slam it in. Let's go. Anything that you, when you're playing Bretonnian, the last thing you want to see is a spell that says, you can't do the thing your entire army is meant to do. You can't charge. So +1 to dispel that from 3 inches further away, making it much harder for them to stay outside your dispel range, especially on level 4, I think is possibly a very necessary spell. Very necessary upgrade.
Yes, I agree. The last thing we can just, I'll just say briefly about this because this is the last thing in the book, so we can finish up. We didn't mention the lore of the lady. There's three spells that your prophecies and damsels can take as signatures instead of the regulars. There's the Lady's Gift, which is an enchantment on a 7 or 10. It's a remains in play, and it gives regeneration 6+ on a 7 or 5+ on a 10 for all, For a target friendly unit. Remains in play, 5+ regeneration save is incredible. Highly recommend.
Last line there is very important as well. It can be cast and they can target a friendly unit already engaged in combat.
Yeah.
So I think that's a nice little condition on the end there that I'm a big fan of.
I mean, it's making your knights possibly, you know, a 3+, 5+, 5+. So it's great.
Yeah. Huge.
Burning Gaze is a cute magic missile. Its range is 5d6 inches. It's cast on a 10. You just draw a straight line 5d6 inches in length from the base of the caster. Any enemy model whose base falls under this line suffers a strength 4 hit with no armor saves allowed. It's cool. If your opponent is doing crazy marching columns, blow them away. Otherwise, I would probably take the Lady's Gift instead. And then Lady's Wrath is a self-enchantment on a 9+, also remains in play. Whilst the spell is in play, the caster, their mount, and any unit they have joined gain +1 to their strength and improve their armor-piercing characteristic by 1. Also fantastic.
Very good. Gift
and Lady's Wrath, both incredible. With between that and the magic resist and all those other bonuses, I would not be mad if I saw people running like a prophetess and a damsel or a double damsel to get both of these.
Yeah, I think these are. I think all three of these are good. Burning Gaze is very conditionally good; has to be against the right opponent. But yeah, Lady's Gift and Lady's Wrath, top tier, fan freaking tastic for what they offer. Anything that gives a regen, dude. Plus, I would happily have if Lady's Wrath just said +1 AP, it would already be good enough. In fact, you get +1 strength and +1 AP, amazing. And what I love about this is that this is the spell you want when you are gonna get charged, or you know, it's casting yourself. Can you cast that? You can't cast that in combat, can you? When you're already in,
yes, you can.
Yes, that's right.
Self can be cast into combat.
So this is the one when you didn't break through. You rolled unders in your first round when you got the charge, and you're like, "Well, I just need to freaking grind through this now. How am I gonna do it? My lances. I'm using hand weapons now. I suck. Well, now you're strength 4, strength 5, AP 1, and you can just start grinding. So much better. I think Lady's Wrath is a very necessary spell. In so many matchups. So it comes time for us to go through the Bretonnian. We've got two ranking systems, essentially, that we run all these through. And essentially, we don't really have a tier system. You know, in a lot of other games, you'll have an S tier, an A tier, a B tier, a C tier, and a D tier. Essentially, we're just going to say top tier, middle tier, lower tier. You know, top of the meta, middle of the meta, bottom of the meta. Or, you know, amazing, good, just okay, or bad. And then we're going to score out of 10 how happy we think Bretonnian players and us as you know, old world players are with this book and what Bretonnians have gotten. And straight up, I think this is a 7 or an 8 out of 10 book. I think this is really well-rounded. It feels flavorful. There's multiple different builds that come out of it. I do think, unfortunately, a lot of options are overshadowed by just how good Peg Knights are. And if Peg Knights should at any point even just slightly come down, it opens up a whole new playbook for them. But I do love every facet here. Everything, the special rules are good. In fact, the worst thing about this are the units. The units are pretty, you know, relatively ordinary, apart from the Peg Knight. The Peg Knight just has a unit entry that makes your eyes pop out of your head. But all the special rules are fantastic. All of the virtues, fantastic. Magic items, fantastic. There's bangers in every section of this book. I think it is very good. How about you?
I agree. I would probably... I'm going to give it a 7, and the main reason I'm giving it a 7 instead of an 8 is because Grail Knights, to me, are a
huge miss.
Are huge miss, and they're like an iconic unit. So for that iconic unit to be at the level it is really disappoints me, and also because Pegasus Knights are just like too good. They're probably the thing that makes Bretonnia like a top tier competitive army. Is Pegasus Knights going up against the other like disgusting broken shit in the meta, but they also kind of ruin a lot of the rest of the book because you want to invest so heavily.
That's essentially why I took 2 points off. I took 1 point off because I felt like Pegasus Knights were too good. And I took another point off because Grail Knights are not good enough. And that's pretty much the two. Internal balance in the book is not as good as I would want it to be. I guess baby knights, not errants. They annoy me as well. But that's not their fault. That's just the fact that Impetuous is too big a downside. Impetuous is just such a rough pill. It's just one keyword that can just tank a whole unit, and it doesn't matter what other unit, what other things they have. The fact that I as a general can lose control of my unit on a 50-50 is cannot have.
I do wish that Impetuous was like old Frenzy, where it was a leadership test, or even if it was a modified leadership test, if they wanted it to be more punishing, rather than just a 50-50, because I want to have some agency. I hate when you don't have agency in the game. There's a lot of stuff that takes away agency already.
Spot on, man. I took away points for internal balance, but apart from that, I think everything else is fantastic in this book. That's I love the feel. I love the flavor. I love that they brought back Lance Formation. Praise be. And they actually made it like impactful and a good choice for a lot of things. I like it a lot. So where would you put these guys? They're on their average all-comers list. I mean, I know their best list can shake with, you know, the toxic stuff in the game, like, you know, just min-maxing Peg Knights and just killy-ass characters, and then just essentially just have the rest of the army be chaff and play a pretty nonsense game. But their all-rounders list, I put it perfectly in the middle of the game, perfectly in the middle of the meta. Yep, I think they're straight across the middle, exactly where you want them to be.
Yep. I think that this is a, outside of Pegasus Knights, bam, it is a fair army, and that's a good thing.
I agree. Yep, totally agree with that. And like I said, we said it before, they have some of the best characters in the game. Like the things, the builds that you can execute on, you know, Barons and Dukes especially, and the utility that the Damsels bring in addition to being a premium caster, I think, Damsels and Prophetesses, I think, you know, superstar characters. Absolutely.
Love it. That's how it should be.
Exactly right. You can customize them in so many different ways, and they're all exciting. It's all the ways you can customize them, give different flavors, and very exciting and make for intuitive builds. So yeah, I'm a big fan of what they've done with Brett's. And then we're going to have another episode probably not too long from now where we do the Arcane Journal, and it just goes to another level in there as well of, you know, flavor and some of these units just getting completely reskinned and a new lease on life. So really happy about to state that as well.
Yes. Yep.
All right, closing thoughts, mate. Any words of advice you'd like to throw out to the budding crusading Bretonian noble out there?
Guys, this is a beautiful army. It looks good on the table. It plays really fun and well. I would expect, and maybe I'm going to be wrong, I would expect an FAQ that's going to clean up some of the Lance Formation stuff that you might have questions about. The big thing is like have fun. This, if you want to play an army that's fast, that does a little bit of everything, but also just feels heroic, which is kind of the whole point of Bretonnia, is to feel heroic. This is it, and it feels so good on the table when it works. So,
yeah, agree. On that note, mate, we are done with this first half. Come over and join us on part two over at Patreon, That Old World Charm, and you can listen to us unpacking and writing some lists for our patrons, talking about what we love, don't love, like, and loathe in this book, and answering a swathe of fantastic questions. So many questions. We hope this, we can get through
them
all.
They wanted the bad.
They were thirsty. They're thirsty crusading Bretonnians, one and all. Anyway, come over and see you over there. Thank you so much for the support so far. We love you all. And get out some and enjoy some more Old World, guys. Peter, say your goodnights.
Bye-bye.
You better win, Danny.
You've been listening to That Old World Charm with those charming chaps, Adam, Danny, and Peter the Falcon. Thanks ever so much. Terrio.